Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Dentz. It's May 23rd, 2017, coming up on the three-day weekend, Memorial Day weekend. If you listened to the show yesterday, you know that this is going to be my last week doing this program, at least for the summer, till at least September. And I'm not going to make a big deal of it on this show. Maybe I'll talk a little bit more about it on Friday, which will be the last episode. Of course, we have a lot to talk about again today. Unfortunately, there was another terrorist attack in England, in Manchester, England, at an Ariana Grande concert, and we're going to get into that. But I saw that Roger Moore died. I know this is going to be a somewhat of a controversial statement, but he was actually my, in fact, probably today while I'm doing some things here at home, I'll probably put in a Roger Moore James Bond movie. He's actually my favorite James Bond. I will tell you that Daniel Craig, the new guy, is a close second. But Roger Moore will always be my version of James Bond, probably because I grew up with him. I can remember becoming aware of James Bond movies late 70s, early 80s, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I've been a big fan of James Bond movies for a long time. And I can remember, must have been early 80s, once in a while they would play a James Bond movie on like the Sunday night movie. Remember when that was a thing, the Sunday night movie, if you're old enough? I can remember them playing James Bond movies. And I can remember, you know, being young enough that I had to go to bed early because I had school the next day. So I had to go to bed at like 9:30 or something like that. Well, the James Bond movie would be on until 11 o'clock or something like that. And my dad is a huge James Bond fan as well. And I can always remember, I can remember to this day thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to be able to stay up late and watch James Bond movies. I can remember that. And, of course, I didn't know the kind of technology that would come along with VCRs and DVDs and streaming and all of that. But now you can watch them anytime you want. You don't have to wait, you know, you don't have to wait till TV plays one. And I don't even think they do that anymore. Maybe on TNT or something like that, but not on the regular channels. So I think that it was in that mindset, whatever was going on in my mind at that time of between, say, 9 years old and 13 years old, that I became a James Bond fan. That was like Moonraker, maybe The Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker, For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy, you know, and A View to a Kill. That came out like when I was 15, and of course with Duran Duran doing the song. That made it, of course, outrageously cool at the time, even though A View to a Kill is not the greatest movie, even though it has Christopher Walken in it. You'd think a movie with Christopher Walken as the bad guy would be pretty good, but A View to a Kill is a little hokey, and probably Roger Moore was a little too old to play James Bond at the time. But Roger Moore will always be, quote-unquote, my James Bond, unless, you know, just those formative years, I guess that's why it is. And if I live to be 80, 85 years old, I'm sure that James Bond movies will continue. And there'll be two or three different James Bonds before I leave this earth. But I think Roger Moore, and also Roger Moore just seemed to be a good guy, the interviews I've ever seen with him. That helps. And he's also the first James Bond actor to die. Because Sean Connery's still alive, even though he's kind of a recluse these days. He hasn't been in a movie in a long time. And George Lazenby, who did that Honor Majesty's Secret Service or whatever that movie's kind of the one-off movie, he's still alive. And, you know, everybody, of course, Pierce Brosnan's still alive. And Timothy Dalton, those two horrible James Bond movies from the late 80s, he's still alive. So Roger Moore is the first James Bond guy who played James Bond to die. So 89 years old. Roger Moore, rest in peace. You brought a lot of enjoyment to a lot of people while you're alive in both the James Bond movies and the other things he did, The Saint and just being, I think, a really good guy. So there you go. Roger Moore dead at 89. So yesterday evening in Manchester, England, this must have happened around 5 o'clock. Let me think about this. What was I doing? It must have been around 6 o'clock Eastern time in the United States, something like that. There was a bombing at the Ariana Grande concert in Manchester, England. There's an arena there. She was performing. I think the concert was somewhat sold out, 20,000 people, mostly young people, mostly younger girls, like teenage girls. I have to admit that I'm not sure I know one Ariana Grande song. The only thing I know about her is I remember from her being at some bakery and licking a donut and putting it back. So, didn't she do that or spit on a donut? You know, something from like, how long ago was that now? 3 years ago? Or was that her? I think that was her. I'm pretty sure that was her. But I don't know any of her songs. I I'm just 46 years old. I'm not supposed to know those things anyway. And I don't have any kids, so there would be no reason for me to know it. But she had this concert, and at the end of the concert, unlike the Paris attack at the Bataclan and elsewhere that took place during the concert, where the gunman broke into the concert, held everybody hostage, and killed everybody there. And of course, some people escaped. The band escaped. Some other people. But a lot of people were held hostage and shot. At this venue, it seems to be a lone wolf, if you want to call it that, lone bomber, suicide bomber, who was waiting outside in the ticket area, in the what they're calling the foyer, which seems like a weird word. I don't think that, maybe that's just the British term for something, but in the ticket area of this arena, inside the arena, but not inside where the concert was taking place. So I guess you could walk through a door. There's an inside area, and then you have the concert going even inside that, which, you know, the last concert I went to was the Iron Maiden concert. They're coming to Tampa, by the way. I went to last year in Sunrise, Florida, which is down there near Miami, Fort Lauderdale, that area. And you couldn't even get inside the building without a ticket. You had to be able to show your ticket, and you had to go through metal detectors and all that to even get inside. So it sounds to me that whatever the security setup was at this venue might have been a little different than what was going on there. But I even say, thinking back to that Iron Maiden concert, that would have been February 2016, that had some suicide bomber decided to show up there, probably really could have done some damage, because people were waiting outside and they were delayed, and it was the first night of the tour, and I don't know what was going on inside, but they let everybody in late, and so you had all like 20,000, 16,000 people sold out hanging outside of this venue waiting to get in. I mean, you know, you start thinking about those things, and you realize that it's a very poor security position. You know, I don't know how many people really thought that standing outside there at that Iron Maiden concert, but it's a fact that even in a situation where you can't get inside without a ticket, that when you start creating those lines outside, you're just creating more of a problem. So I'm not sure what the answer is to these events, whether it's concerts or sporting events. I don't know, carnivals and, you know, any sort of state fairs. I don't know what the answer is. I don't think there is a good answer for any of it. You can have all the police and metal detectors and everything else, but metal detectors, all they do is cause more lines and more people gathering in a place together. You know, on the one hand, you want people to be moving smoothly into the venue. But on the other hand, you don't want everybody to get into the venue because, once again, people, you know, you have to look at the tickets, you have to scan them. It's just, I don't know how you work that out. In contrast to like an airport situation where, yeah, there are a bunch of people there, but they're all arriving at different times. They're going inside. It's a fairly large building. People going in different directions. And there's plenty of safeguards before you ever get to the place where you have to go through the metal detectors and take your shoes off and do all of that. Just a little bit of a different situation. So I guess as long as humans go to concerts and go to large gatherings and everything, this is going to be an issue. And I don't know what kind of politics can change that. I don't know what kind of security can change that. I don't know what kind of technology can change that. I have no idea. I don't know. I know that, you know, 2017, we think that we're pretty technologically advanced. You know, the last 25 years with DNA and everything we can use to track down criminals and GPS and everything. If you have a guy who has a bomb strapped to him and there's just a bunch of people hanging out somewhere, a group of people, there's nothing that can stop that. Nothing. Not computers, not jets, not submarines, not nuclear missiles, not the mother of all bombs, nothing. And that is the world that we live in. Now, what makes this, I guess, particularly horrendous is that eventually you're going to find out all the people that were killed. And I'm going to say that there's 22 dead. I'm going to say most of them are children under the age of 18. In fact, I've already seen one of the victims. She was only 8 years old. So, and 59 injured. You're going to find that most of that would that add up to 81 people overall between the dead people who died and injured. 81. Most of them are going to be young people, and probably a lot of them are going to have, the ones that survive are going to have injuries that will never heal. It'll be like the Boston Marathon bombing, which is probably another good example of what we're talking about here, where people gather, and really, what are you going to do? But you're probably going to have some people who survived, young people who probably lost legs, lost arms, going to be scarred for life. Of course, they're all going to be scarred for life, mentally. But there will be physical scars that will go along with what happened. The person himself, as is seen, you can almost predict this now. You can, the odds of this statement being made after a terrorist attack like that these days is quite probable. And the statement is, the guy who did this was the police were aware of him beforehand. And I'm not the first guy to make this point, but you start to wonder, and I think that when I think of this, I think back to the shooting in Orlando, in which there was the belief out there that the reason that that guy decided to go to the Orlando club that night and do what he did was because he had been on the FBI's radar and had been interviewed before and might have been afraid that he was eventually going to get caught. So that might have moved up the timeline of what he was going to do. There is that thought out there regarding him. I don't know if that's relevant to the San Bernardino shooting. I don't know if that's relevant to the Fort Hood shooting and all these other, the marathon, Boston Marathon. I don't know. But in the Orlando terrorist attack, I think that that was a factor. And are we to the point, at least in the United States, where if the FBI goes and talks to somebody, just if they suspect the guy's or woman's going to do something, might as well just take them into custody even though they haven't done anything yet? I know that is totally against our system of laws in the United States. And there would surely be a defense attorney out there, or defense attorneys plural, who would take up the cause of these people who are being taken into custody even though they haven't done anything yet. You know, they might have written a couple things online, might have said some, a couple things to some coworkers that gets them on the FBI's radar. But if they haven't done any terrorist attacks yet, and they haven't seemingly bought any bomb materials, and they have no felonies, so you can't take the gun if they own a gun away from them, and they're an American citizen, what are you going to do? Because remember, the Orlando terrorist attack was not a bombing, it was a shooting. The guy shot his way into the venue, then held those people hostage and murdered them. Whereas this guy in Manchester had a bomb and waited till everybody was coming out and set it off, killing himself and 22 people, injuring 59. So, and ISIS has claimed responsibility for this. And are we going to find out that this is what I've always said about this? Is that you're going to find that this guy did this, might not have had any direct contact with ISIS, but he just kind of seen what ISIS is doing and became inspired to do the same. Once again, I don't know how you stop that. You know, if there are communications out there between this guy and ISIS, then that's something that the FBI can track down. But I'm going to guess that ISIS has websites out there that aren't blocked, that a lot of people who would never think about committing a terrorist act, they aren't radical Muslim, they have no, but they're just curious, they go there. So how do you differentiate the people who are just curious about this from the people who buy into the propaganda and then get inspired to do something? I don't know how you do that. And even if we were able to psychologically or take every, let's say, American, over 300 million of us, well, adults, let's say 200 million, and, put them in a psychiatrist chair and talk to them, I still don't think you'd be able to weed out the people who you thought were going to commit a terrorist act. You know, it's very much like being in a completely pitch black room looking for something, but you don't know what you're looking for, and you don't know how big the room is. You just know that there's something bad in there that you have to find. You know that you're in the general right location, but you have no idea how big the area is, and you don't even know what you're looking for. I don't know how you go about doing that. I have no idea. So, is this the new normal? I think so. I have the belief that the only way that you can't stop it, but slow it from happening, is to take terrorists and terrorist groups out of the news. The only way you can do that is to kill every single one of these people who are actively engaged in it, which means they're not these lone wolves, but they're working as groups in the Middle East, wherever else. I think that is the start of this. That's the start to slowing it down. You're never going to be able to stop it. Never. And if you think that your goal is to stop it forever, then you're always going to be frustrated. The goal is to slow it down and to kill all of those people who are inspiring others. Because I think that is what's going on. I think. And I remind you again, the reason they do this is because they hate us. The reason they hate us is because we breathe. Remember, they don't care if, for the most part, if you're Muslim or not. There might have been some Muslim people at that concert last night. That suicide bomber, he doesn't give a dang about that. There might have been some Muslims at the Bataclan in France that night. They don't care. they view what goes on in Western culture as being bad, and if Muslims are taking part in it, they're bad too. In fact, the only time of all of these situations, these terrorist attacks that I can think of, I think of the one in India, that hotel, that's, I've heard the story, and that's one of the few times where it seems like those Pakistanis who'd gone into India and ended up killing all of those Indians in that hotel, it seems the only people who were saved, there was a couple who were actually, I think they were Jewish, I think, but they were looked Middle Eastern, and they faked their way to pretending they're Muslim. They were going to be shot, and then they were able to recite some Muslim prayer and convince these terrorists they were Muslim, and the terrorists let them go. Just something that comes to mind. That is the only instance that I could think of off the top of my head where, and I'm sure there are others, but that's just one comes to mind. But it's very rare where terrorists actually take people's religion into account. It's very rare. A lot of Muslims were killed on 9/11. A lot of Muslims have been killed in all of these terrorist attacks across the world. Muslims who would have never in their entire life thought about killing anybody themselves or being a terrorist or anything. They're dead too. Now, it does occur to me, in knowing about this concert, that the tour, and this, I'm going to guess that this is a song that she has. I have no idea, but I know what Ariana Grande looks like. That's about it. This is called the Powerful Woman Tour. I'm wondering, do you think that might have drawn attention, gotten the attention of this bomber, that he knew that Ariana Grande was coming to town, maybe saw an advertisement that she was going to be in Manchester, and it was called the Powerful Women Tour? Well, we know that Muslims, more thing they hate than anything, are powerful women. And I'm wondering if that guy thought that this would be the perfect place to pull off this bombing at a concert where the main performer is going to be talking about powerful women. I think that's what it was called. That does occur to me. That, oh, you think you're powerful? Well, let me show you. You're a powerful white girl from the United States. Well, I'm going to show you. You're going to be powerful. I'll show you how powerful I am. I'm going to kill a bunch of your fans. You're not powerful at all. I'm powerful. Islam is powerful. Islam is going to take over the world. And then all of you powerful women won't exist anymore, and you'll all be slaves to us men. I do not see this as a coincidence. Likewise, I don't think it's a coincidence, for example, in the Orlando bombing, or Orlando shooting, that was a gay nightclub. Oh, you gay people, you think you're so cool and so fashionable and so moral and you know, you're getting more rights here in the United States? Well, I'm going to show you. That does occur to me. And going to San Bernardino, killing people at a team building meeting / Christmas party. Oh, you're Christians, you're going to celebrate Christmas? I'll show you. So that occurs to me, just looking at the theme of the tour and her music. And, of course, Ariana Grande, I think, you know, she's dancing up there with hardly anything on, which is, that's what we do, that's entertainment. And there is another part of me that, of course, there's that. Women showing too much skin, that's a theme as well. This also, though, goes back to something that I've said for a long time, and this is eventually going to happen. If I live for 40 more years, it's going to happen. That a famous person is going to be the victim of a terrorist attack. an actor, actress, singer, author. Granted, I could throw politicians in there, but they're probably, I'm thinking in those terms. Yes. Would ISIS be able to figure out a way to kill the president of the United States, no matter who it is, whether it was Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, whoever else? Yes. But when I think of this, I think of somebody famous, somebody who is world-renowned, is in pop culture, not necessarily a politician. And so when I think about, you know, Ariana Grande being there, she's, of course, known. But, you know, I think about, I mentioned Iron Maiden before, these bands are out on the road. Yes, they're flying from place to place, but a lot of bands are busing from place to place. Maybe, you know, specifically in Europe, where a lot of these venues are closer to each other, in contrast to, like, Iron Maiden, when they go on a tour, they may only do 15. Of course, they're coming to the United States for the second time now, but first time around, I think they only went to, like, 10 cities or something like that, 10, 12 cities, so they're not going to bus between them. Of course, Bruce Dickinson can fly. So they have their 747, and they just fly all their equipment from place to place to place because they're not going from – they're not going to do a concert in Miami, then come up and do a concert in Orlando, come over and do a concert in Tampa, then go up and do a concert in New Orleans. That's not what they do. They're not – that's not what they do. And some other bands may do that, but not bands like that. But bands that are like that – cruising around in a tour bus from city to city, I think that they have to look at what went on at this Ariana Grande concert and think, is our security enough? You know, these famous bands, you know, I was saying about in Europe. In Europe, that's how a lot of bands tour, American bands or British bands that go to Europe, that's how they tour because they do go from city to city, kind of like that. And if they're on the highways over there, who knows what can happen? You're just a bus going down the roadway, just like any other tour bus. And so I think of the bands, you know, Def Leppard's on tour right now, Kiss is always on tour, Iron Maiden, all these groups. And I think ISIS would love to get a hold of one of these bands as hostage, or we could go the director of an actor who is going somewhere, maybe on a press tour for a movie. And granted, they have security, but if a bunch of ISIS guys, like, you know, what happened in Paris in 2015, if they decide that they want to do something, what's a couple bodyguards, you know, for Tom Cruise or somebody going to do? Not going to be able to do much. They'll track whoever's movements. So it doesn't have to be Tom Cruise. Could be a woman. If I were in that type of position, if I were that famous, or I don't know what I'd do. I don't know. Being famous means being known. Being known, to be known, you have to be out there. You have to do shows. You have to go and appear in front of your fans. And you know, the only person who was ever famous without appearing in front of everybody was Howard Hughes. And even that, he was earlier in his career. He got to the point where he was a recluse, but everybody knew who he was. So, I don't think you could do that today. And I even know with me, with the other show that I do on Found that I'm going to be, told you yesterday, I'm going to be working on this summer. We talk about killers. We talk about disappearances, but a lot of these disappearances, we myself and the listeners believe, and police believe, are murders. And we talk about the suspects in that. So, you know, here I am out there. And I have to tell you, I think about that. That there are free men out there who are probably suspects in these disappearances. Here I am talking about them, saying what I think they did. And they probably did. Some of them probably did do it. I know I'm going to guess I probably got at least a few of them correct. You know, so I think about that. And I'm not even famous. So I'm hoping that well-known people, not just in the music industry, but overall, take a look at what has happened here. Because if ISIS were to get a hold of a famous person and hold that person hostage, or group hostage, or band hostage, or anything, it would be a huge coup for them, and it would be even more, it would make other people even more emboldened that ISIS is this powerful entity, and other people should join them. So famous people, got to watch out, I think. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back in America's Conservative Podcast. Terrorism, it's always going to be a topic. I'm leaving this show at the this Friday. I'm sure if I came back 20 years from now, it's still going to be a topic. I don't know in what form. I don't know what's going to happen between now and then. I don't know how many people will be killed. I don't know what methods of terrorism are going to happen, whether it's going to be more shootings and bombings. Are terrorists going to get a hold of a nuclear bomb? Are they going to get a hold of a cruise ship? I don't know. But it's always going to be a topic. All we can do is make sure that we are fighting it as well as possible. And I have to tell you, I don't know if we've been doing that. I don't know. I think that had the day after September 11th happened, the day after September 11th, if you would have told everybody in the world that not quite 16 years from now, that there would be a terrorist attack at an area, they wouldn't even know who Ariana Grande was at the time, but there was going to be attack at a concert venue in Manchester, England, in which 22 people were killed, mostly children, and 59 were injured. I think people back then would have said, I guess we failed. I guess what has gone, what went on between September 12th, 2001 and May 22nd, 2017 is a failure. And I would have a hard time arguing with that, even though I know that we can't stop it. But then if you told them, well, the guy that did it was connected to this terrorist group in the Middle East that has existed, that got started in about 2011 because we left Iraq too early, and this group rose to power and took off a lot of Iraq, and we're still fighting them, but we don't have many troops over there. And oh yeah, the Russians are in Syria trying to do this. That, if you would have told somebody like that on September 12th, 2001, they would have said, well, just what have you done? What did you do? What did we do? What the heck is going on here? It reminds me of a clip from NFL Films. What's going on out there? I think that was Vince Lombardi that was yelling that. I think that those people on September 12th, 2001, if you were to tell them all that, would have said, then we really haven't been a success with, and I would say probably not. But if there is a terrorist group controlling thousands of square miles, if not, would it be millions? At least hundreds of thousands of square miles in the Middle East, leaving death and destruction everywhere it goes, that is a loss. And it will continue to be a loss until that changes. By whatever means, whether we drop a bunch of nuclear bombs on them, whether we work with others to defeat them, whether somebody else does it, that should be our main concern. Because I think that that situation causes everything else. Everything radiates, all the terrorism that exists elsewhere in the world radiates from what is going on in the Middle East with ISIS. It just does. And these people hear about what ISIS is doing, they see what ISIS is doing, and then they want to do it themselves. So, but I, once again, 20 years from now, I have to think that we're still going to be doing it. We're still going to be fighting it the way we are in You know, it's like we're fighting not to lose instead of fighting to win. I don't know how serious we are about it. We had, you know, isolationism is a popular ideology, a popular political issue in the United States. Staying out of stuff. A lot of liberals love it because they think that we're the cause of all of it, so they just want to let the Middle East do whatever it wants. And then there are a lot of libertarians and some conservatives who think about what does this have to do with the United States? Is it in our interest? And do we really want to send thousands of American troops over there to do this? And look, and then of course a lot of conservatives have flip-flopped on Iraq, were for it, and then before they were against going in. When you put all that together, it's no wonder that we can't get put together a cohesive idea on how to defeat ISIS. I think there is a part of the United States that is just worn out about battling it. They want terrorism to end, but they don't want any Americans to die to make it stop. And I think that that is an untenable position. I think that those two things cannot go together. I think that if terrorism is going to end in the world, I think that we are going to have to fight them, and we are going to have to put Americans in harm's way much more than we're doing right now. And yes, some of them may die. That's what I believe. I think that it's, you know, and that is how I feel a lot about a lot of political issues. A lot of people want bad things to end. I just don't know how much they're willing to do about it. I don't know. So they want the federal budget to be balanced, but they don't want to cut back on spending. They want the federal budget to be balanced, but they don't want to change up the tax system. I don't know. To me, it's all the same. It's no use in having these ideas about wanting things to end if you're not willing to do what it takes to end them. I'd prefer you just not talk about it. I'd prefer you not even, you know, think about it. So, I don't know. Let's move on to something else that's kind of connected to this. And this happened right over in Hillsborough County, which is the county in which Tampa exists. I'm over here in Pinellas County, which is where St. Petersburg and Clearwater are. But across the causeway, across Tampa Bay, is Tampa, and that's Hillsborough County. This happened in Hillsborough County. There was this guy, Devin Arthurs, Arthurs, who murdered two of his roommates. And I think the way this all, I mean, it's a very weird scenario where there was four guys living together and one had gone away for Army Reserve duty. And when he came back, he found that two of his roommates had been murdered, shot and killed, and the other roommate was gone. Police were called, police showed up, looking around, trying to figure out what happened. They tracked down the other guy who, once again, his name was Devin Arthurs, and I guess he tried to take some people hostage for a little bit before giving himself up. And he admitted to killing these two roommates because they had disrespected his religion. His religion, Islam. So, you know, it's murder. And it's not maybe that totally unusual, but let me give you the unusual part. I think that all of these roommates were white guys. On top of that, I believe that this Devin Arthurs had recently been a neo-Nazi. So at some point he went from being a neo-Nazi to converting to Islam, to the point where he felt that he needed to kill these two others because they allegedly disrespected his religion. going from Neo being a neo-Nazi to becoming Muslim to the point of defending Islam is an interesting transition to me. You go from being a neo-Nazi believing that the white race is the superior race to being involved in a religion where I think very few what you would call Caucasians, meaning Western Europeans, are involved in that religion. Very strange. To the point where he murdered these two others. They said that he disrespected his religion, so he had to kill them. On top of that, and this is maybe the other distressing part, when the police showed up, they were looking around the house. And keep in mind, the guy who found these two dead guys had just come back from Army Reserve duty. Well, it turns out that that guy had been keeping fertilizer and some other materials that could have been used to create a bomb. So the guy who called the police about these two guys being dead, he also got taken into custody for having these explosive material that he's not supposed to have. Meanwhile, you had this guy who's now obviously a radical Muslim in under the same roof where this explosive material was. And this just happened across the bay from where I live in Hillsborough County. And now, if this was discovered, now the only reason we know this even happened is because of these two guys being murdered. What if these two guys aren't murdered? What if these four guys continued to live happily under this house, under this roof, wherever they were? And this obviously, this radical Muslim had access to all of that bomb material. Now you start, and I don't know if this Devin Arthur's guy was on any police radar whatsoever. I have no idea. Now you see how tough it is to fight terrorism. But I ask you this, and this goes back to one of my major points about terrorism. Does Devin Arthur's convert to Islam if ISIS doesn't exist? If terrorism, instead of being seen as this cohesive group of radicals in the Middle East, instead it's more like just a bunch of radical individuals and small little groups here and there just trying to get away with stuff, but if it's something like that instead of ISIS, does Devin Arthur's convert to Islam? I don't think he does. I don't think he does. And because what I see, when I see a story like this from a guy who goes from being a neo-Nazi to being a radical Muslim, that's quite a conversion. That's quite a range of behavior and ideology. Even though I know that these Middle Eastern countries patterned their way of governance off of the Nazis in Germany from World War II. That's a true story of Nazis in 1930s Germany. That's true. Other than that, though, I'm not sure how much they have in common. So there's something about radical Islam that taps into the worst of human nature. Neo-Nazis is the worst of human nature. Radical Islam is the worst of human nature, even though they don't necessarily have a lot in common. One wants Muslims to rule the world. Neo-Nazis want white people to rule the world. And I don't know how much they really care about what the religion is. Radical Islam, these terrorists, they know how to tap into that part of human nature. They know how to the message that's sent out that is going to attract people like Devin Arthur's, even though he was a neo-Nazi and had nothing to do with Islam until he converted to it. This is also the reason, I think, that there's a saying out there that if you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for anything. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And I've had this thought for a long time that a lot of these people who end up getting pulled into this, you know, there's many stories out there on Google. You can find them about white women, white and particularly British women, who have converted to Islam. And you also can find a lot of articles about a lot of atheists who have converted to Islam. People going from one way of life and radically changing to something else. I can say for the record, there is no rational reason that any woman would convert to Islam. No rational reason. None. Zero. Not the way, not in the incarnation, not in the way Islam exists in the 21st century. But they do. This reminds me of those girls who went off and wanted to be brides of ISIS. It's hard to figure out. But that's why I continue to say the best way to fight against Islam and radical Islam is to make sure you fill your head with good things, with good thoughts. And that's why I think with atheists, you know, I'm not an atheist. Frankly, I don't have a lot of respect for people who are atheists because I know that their minds are filled with nothing. So we shouldn't be surprised. You know, you go back and look at all the crimes. You're amazed at how many criminals are atheists. How many people that convert to Islam are atheists? There's just something about the message that radical Islam puts out there that draws these types of people in. It draws radical people in. It draws people who, I don't know, want power, want control. There's something missing in their life. Radical Islam knows how to talk to these people better than the rest of society does. And this is why I've said that you have to stop this. You have to stop it at the focal point. You have to stop it where the message is being broadcast from. And mainly, that is in the Middle East. I would even go as far to say, you could say, talk about these radical mosques in the United States or in England and France and everything. They would certainly tone their messages down if ISIS was wiped off the earth. Because these radical imams, the rest of them, they know that they're going to be protected by ISIS and by those radical people who are in the community. But if ISIS doesn't exist anymore, if it gets its butt kicked, that kind of protection that these imams have, these mosques have, is going to go away. And it is this messaging that keeps this going to the point where you have neo-Nazis converting to Islam. You have atheists converting to Islam. You have women who have their rights and their freedom and their independence and their jobs and their own money and everything giving it all up to go to radical Islam. Basically giving all of that away. Now, the funny thing is that the people who are least likely to be converts to Islam, radical Islam, I should say, are good Christians. Also, they are good conservatives. I'm not saying there's not Muslim conservatives out there. There are, but I'm talking about, have you ever heard, really, of a man or woman who is a conservative who eventually turned and became a radical Muslim or terrorist? I can't think of one. Neo-Nazism is not a far-right left ideology. It's a far-left ideology. Nazism is National Socialism. Socialism is on the left side of the political ideology scale. Remember that. You don't hear about a lot of Christians who are going to mass or to church, everything, converting to radical Islam, becoming terrorists. You don't hear about any conservatives. But there are plenty of stories about a lot of liberal women who become enamored of Islam. Right? A lot of atheists, neo-Nazis. It's very strange how that happens. And I happen to believe it's because the Christianity and conservatism take better hold in a person's brain than those other things do. Because I think all of those other things are just mush. I think liberalism is mush. I think atheism is mush. And of course, you don't find a lot of Jewish people converting to radical Islam either. There's just something that... That's why I continue to say, just because we call all of these political ideas, systems of ideology, does not make them equal. And just because we call all of these theories about how man came to be and whether there is a God or not, just because we call them all ideologies and theologies, doesn't mean they're all equal either. Just like everybody has an opinion, it doesn't mean all opinions are equal. Some opinions are better informed than others. They're more knowledgeable than others. They're more on point than others. It doesn't mean anything that everybody has an opinion. Anybody can do that. This is why we as this is what bothers me so much about conservatism being watered down in the last couple years, with so many conservatives following Donald Trump. See, I got this far into the program without talking about Donald Trump. See, I can do that. This is what worries me about it, because when conservatism gets watered down, it makes it more likely that people will start having non-conservative ideas in their minds, but they'll convince themselves that they're still conservative. They'll convince themselves that they're still correct when they're not. Just like these people who are converting and convince themselves that going to radical Islam and taking up the fight is the right thing to do. They see it as, even though we can say, you know what you're doing is crazy, right? You know that's wrong, right? You know that. They don't see it that way. Doesn't matter what we think about it. It only matters what they think. And we have to figure out why their thoughts changed. Doesn't matter if we think they're crazy. They don't think they're crazy. It's our job to convince them that what they're doing is wrong. This is no different than dealing with a bunch of psychiatric patients, you know, who believe that, you know, there are purple elephants and unicorns and there is a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It doesn't matter that we know those things aren't true. Our job is to convince them that those things aren't true. Well, I don't believe that's just crazy. Well, it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter that you don't think there's anything wrong with Ariana Grande and everything. They do have a problem with her. Of course, they're wrong. So we have to stop it. And we haven't done enough. Just haven't. No matter, I know that hurts all of these families who've lost loved ones, sons, daughters, mothers, fathers, since September 11, 2001. But I have to tell you that I don't think we've done enough. Whatever we did in those years hasn't been enough. We need to do more. Or you're just going to have this stuff continue to happen at this regular, what I would call a regular place. I don't know if we can ever stop it, but there's surely... something better about it only happening once every 10 years than once a year. Surely. We're never going to get it to zero. We just want to keep it as controlled as possible. And we're just not doing enough. And I think I'm always going to think that. But I got to go. EdwardDensel.com is the site. Podomatic and iTunes where you can find this show at least until Friday. Show will be on RedStateTalkRadio.com until Friday. My other show that I'll be working on is a missing persons program and found. I'm going to be working on a book about all the cases I've covered so far. You can find it at Podomatic and iTunes. Actually, I had a special episode come out yesterday very popular. You can follow that program on Twitter, Unfound Podcast. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.